broken count, so I broke a sweat. I've got some things that I sort of regret about now. Broke my pace and ran out of time. Sometimes I'm so full of shit that it should be a crime.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Winslow Wheeler, who has worked on national security issues for 31 years for members of the U.S. Senate and for the U.S. General Accounting Office. In 2002, he authored an essay under the pseudonym Spartacus about Congress's reaction to the September 11th terrorist attacks, which led senators to ask for his resignation from the Republican staff of the Senate Budget Committee. He is now a senior fellow and director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Center for Defense Information and the author of The Wastrels of Defense, How Congress Sabotages U.S. Security and The Pentagon Labyrinth, 10 Short Essays to Help You Through It, available at the Center for Defense Information and online at Amazon. Welcome to Background Briefing, Winslow Wheeler.
It's my privilege. Thanks very much.
And the president today, in a rare appearance at the Pentagon, in announcing his new strategic review, said that the tide of war is receding. I guess the president hasn't been watching the Republican debates because they're all falling over each other to be the first to bomb Iran.
Right. I think it's exactly right to point that out first thing about what he said today. The words he used that I heard were, the wars of the last decade are over. And he's drawing a stark difference between himself and the lurid rhetoric we're hearing from all of the Republican candidates, except for Ron Paul. And you have to think that that's a major campaign theme that we're going to hear next year, analogous to 1964. You know, you can have these wild-eyed guys who want to run around getting us in still more fights that we can't finish, or me. And I was, frankly, very glad to hear that. I suspect that means he's going to try to stick to his guns on getting the heck out of Afghanistan, albeit late, but by 2014. And I think that's a positive development. That's the one positive development I pulled out of the press conferences this morning.
Well, already, of course, the president's announcements have been met with scorn from the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Buck McKeon, who says it is a retreat from the world in the guise of a new strategy. So given the president's efforts to cut $450 billion from the Pentagon, and then you'd have to add another $500 billion to that if Congress fails to agree on its deficit reduction plan following the debt ceiling deal in August, the Republicans could have some grist for the mill, surely, in terms of weakening defense.
Well, he's going to frame it differently. What's going on in the Pentagon budget is not cuts. There are reductions from previous plans for the future. There are increases from the Pentagon budget where it is this year and last year. As Obama pointed out in his part of the events this morning, under his plan for the next 5 years, the dollar amounts for the Pentagon are going to go up, not down. And he's going to smack that back right in the face of whomever the Republicans decide to nominate when they, start, foaming with this sort of delirious idea that if we spend more money, will make our defenses stronger. It's counterintuitive, but there's no evidence of that. For the past 10 years, we've added huge amounts of money to the non-war parts of our defense budget, almost $1 trillion in the so-called base Pentagon budget, not counting the additional monies for the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, et cetera. With that additional $1 trillion, our Pentagon managers managed to make our forces smaller, older, and less trained, except for the Army, which is essentially flat in terms of brigade combat teams. The Navy's battle force has shrunk by about 10%, and the Air Force's combat squadrons of fighters, fighter bombers, and long-range bombers has shrunk by 50%. It's not a smaller, newer force. It's a smaller, older force. Our major equipment is, on average, older than it was 10 years ago. And we spend less time training our forces. It's really incredible. And it's remarkable that the Republican plan or advocacy is to do more of this. Sadly, Obama is pretty oblivious to these negative trends, but at least he will be saying that what cuts are you talking about? You know, my budget calls for increases.
Again, I'm speaking with Winslow Wheeler, who has worked on national security issues for 31 years for members of the U.S. Senate and for the U.S. General Accounting Office. He is now the director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Center for Defense Information. Now, just let's get this straight, though, because I'm always astounded. We spend more on defense than I think everybody in the world combined at this point. Certainly,
it's almost that. A few years ago, it was that, but now it's about 46% of the rest of the world.
And you're saying that we seem to be spending more than ever, but we're getting less and less? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. We're at post-World War II highs in terms of spending. We have been at a post-World War II high since about 2006 or so. And our forces are much smaller than they were during the Cold War. You've heard a lot of talk about the so-called doomsday mechanism that would automatically exact cuts in the Pentagon budget next January if Congress doesn't do anything to prevent it. If those cuts did occur, as they probably will, they will return the Pentagon budget to $470 billion a year. That is not a valley in post-World War II spending. It's not a peak either, but it's about in the middle. It's notably significantly above the average spending we spent in inflation-adjusted dollars during the Cold War. If we go to that so-called doomsday level of spending, $470 billion a year, that would be about $40 billion above what we spent on average during the Cold War. And so it's not a puny budget. It's a budget very flush with money. It's a budget that would be about three times the size of the military budget of China, counting all their spending on military resources. It's a budget that is more than twice the defense budgets of China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, and anybody else you want to list as a problem country. It's not a puny budget.
So what's happening with all this extra money then? I think it's about 2007 levels we'll be back to if the axe falls because of the sequestration deal. Where is all this extra money going to? That's what
it's
I don't
know. It's gone into cost growth, both for hardware and for people. In hardware, as measured by the General Government Accountability Office, back in the year 2000, we had about $50 billion of cost overruns in hardware programs. In 2008, the last time they measured it, it was about $300 billion of cost overruns in the hardware programs. We're spending more for hardware and getting less because the unit cost of hardware has gone through the ceiling. We've replaced $60 million F-15s with, get this, $400 million F-22s.
Which is a troubled aircraft, too, I understand.
Pardon me?
It's a troubled program.
It's a highly troubled program. We can talk about it if you want, but it's not the wonder weapon that you would expect for all that incredible amount of money for it. It's a big disappointment in terms of aerodynamic performance, and it relies on extraordinarily complex cost-driving technologies that in the past have failed as effective weapons for air-to-air combat. And its design is driven by this so-called stealth characteristic that reduces, does not eliminate, its radar signature in the presence of some radars at some angles. The designer of the airplane paid a huge penalty to be so-called stealthy, which is a very limited tactical advantage. And we're finding out now that the stealth coating is not working so well, and it's not met its spec on radar cross-section. And throughout about 4 months of 2011, the airplane was grounded, every single one of them, because they had a somewhat mysterious problem with the oxygen supply for the pilots that they fully haven't understood yet. The problems with that airplane go on and on.
Well, I lost a pilot up in Alaska because the oxygen supply ran out.
Yes, the plane crashed basically because it cut off the pilot's oxygen. And there was an interesting, fascinating accident report the Air Force produced a couple months ago that explains that they really have a mystery on their hands. They really don't know what's going on. They've restored the F-22 to flight status, but they haven't gotten to the bottom of the problem.
And this is a that's a $450 million accident.
$417 million per airplane.
Right. And they've been providing pilots and crew with oxygen since World War II, right?
Right.
It's pretty bizarre, isn't it?
It's also extraordinarily expensive to operate. According to Air Force data, it's about $55,000 per hour to operate that airplane.
Well, what about this other one that they've got that's also being bought in huge quantities, the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter? I understand
right.
The
good news is that the F-22 is a better airplane than the F-35. The F-35 is to put it simply, it's a failed design. It's even more complex than the F-22. They hoped for it to be affordable. It's not. Its current unit price is up to about $155 million per airplane, and that's going north, not south. Everybody is eyeballing the F-35 as a bill payer for some of these other programs that are in trouble also as we go forward into a period of modest rather than dramatic Pentagon budget growth. It has all kinds of problems, and we're only 20% through a flight test program, and that flight test program itself is inadequate. It will only test 20% or 17% of the airplane's performance characteristics. The rest will be, quote, validated, unquote, with computer modeling and, if you can believe it, desk studies. That program should have been canceled a long time ago. It should be canceled now. They're not going to, but they will stretch out the production, and that will make the annual cost for the purchases smaller. But in the long run, it'll make the program even more expensive because you're producing it at a less efficient rate. It's a real nightmare of a program.
And we'd be better off just extending the life of the existing aircraft that we have?
Absolutely. In some proponents' respects, the F-35 is a step backwards from airplanes like the A-10 and the F-16. It would be quite simple to put together a properly conceived program for a new air-to-air fighter and new air-to-ground bombers and new close-air support fighters like the A-10, you'd have to start from scratch, and the airplanes would have to be purpose-designed rather than these multi-role designs, and you'd have to engage in competition and fly before you buy, all basic principles that the F-35 violates.
So this really, it's mind-boggling to listen to what you're telling us, Winslow Wheeler. This goes way beyond the notion that a camel is a racehorse designed by a committee. It's just hard to believe. There's got to be some structural reason why the Pentagon and the military contracts come up with these amazing ways to waste the taxpayers' money and to end up with stuff that they're worse off with than they would have been if they would have stayed with what they already had in the inventory. I'm just astounded. Why is the system so broken?
Well, it is bad by design. these programs don't turn out this way by accident. You have to work at it to make them as ill-conceived as they are. There's two things going on. One is that people in our defense infrastructure think that technology for technology's sake is something to develop rather than technology that helps pilots and soldiers do what they have to do in combat. We're not doing the latter, we're doing the former. And we're also doing it in a way that enriches the participants, whether they be members of Congress or uniformed or civilian officials in the Pentagon, to say nothing of the contractors. It's a self-feeding process that we've evolved, and the F-35 is an extremely negative example of it, but sadly it's typical of how we do business on weapons development and production, and it's a very sad story.
And we haven't even got into the aspect of it, which is that these are programs that were essentially designed with the Cold War in mind for air superiority fighting, you know, the Warsaw Pact. Are there any examples on the horizon where U.S. aircraft were getting dogfights with some other air force? I mean,
well, I take some difference with you. You always want to have a competent air-to-air fighter. You want to have a good air-to-ground delivery aircraft for supporting troops in the field. I have no problem with upgrading the systems we have. That can be done at a small fraction of the cost that we're paying for things like the F-22 and the F-35 if you do them right. But it takes great spine and courage in today's system and extraordinary skill to push through these systems when they're properly conceived of. We've done it. We did it with the F-16 and the A-10, but we studiously avoided those kinds of lessons, and we've designed airplanes, for example, not for simplicity and effectiveness, but instead we've designed them for complexity and cost. And it'll take great leadership to move us back to the kinds of thinking that got us the F-16 and the A-10. Very sadly, we don't have that kind of leadership today.
But it is, the reason we're talking a lot about these two systems is that this is a zero-sum game, isn't it, the money that's available? And there's going to be less of it. I mean, what the president said today and Panetta at the Pentagon is that, you know, we've got to get our domestic house in order, and we just don't have this kind of money to throw around.
That's right, and this is just the first set of reductions that the Pentagon is going to be experiencing. I fully expect that after the elections at the end of this year, no matter who is president, they're going to be faced with a situation both inside the Pentagon and the federal government in general that means that we're going to be spending less on the Pentagon, and we'll return to historic norms in terms of spending. What that means is that, you know, the business as usual types will scream bloody murder, but that will be an economic necessity for the United States to get all of its spending under control. The Pentagon is not a good jobs engine at all, and I think President Obama has acknowledged, and part of our political system has acknowledged, that our taste for these misadventures, these wars in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and Yemen and Somalia, is not something the American population has any more patience for. So I think we're going to see a very different environment in the coming years, both in terms of our international behavior and in terms of our Pentagon budget. Right now, we don't have the leadership that can cope with that, and we better find it pretty soon.
Well, just in closing, what about the people inside the Pentagon? If the Air Force is getting the lion's share of all this money and coming up with useless systems that don't work and cost record amounts of money, if you can't have the political leadership you're calling for or people that are capable of getting the taxpayer some value for money, some pressure is going to come from within the military itself, the competing services.
Well, yeah, the armed forces are not a monolith. There's lots of people inside the Pentagon that are very concerned about both the wars and the prospect of another war with Iran and about how we buy weapons and who are the people who benefit from this system. There are lots of individuals of character and intellect in the Pentagon that understand the negative things that are going on. What they need is some leadership that permits them to articulate their concerns and to talk about solutions to some of these problems that that are, you know, maybe not difficult to think of, but very difficult to implement.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Winslow Wheeler.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Winslow Wheeler, who has worked on national security issues for 31 years for members of the U.S. Senate and for the U.S. General Accounting Office. In 2002, he authored an essay under the pseudonym Spartacus about Congress's reaction to the September 11th terrorist attacks, which led senators to ask for his resignation from the Republican staff of the Senate Budget Committee. He is now a senior fellow and director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Center for Defense Information and the author of The Wastrels of Defense, How Congress Sabotaged U.S. Security, and The Pentagon Labyrinth, 10 Short Essays to Help You Through It. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment talking about why the Republicans have been blocking the appointment of the president's new head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
There's no blankets for the winter. There's no oil in the lamp. And I'd like to write my congressman, but I can't afford the stamp. You want me to pay my taxes so you can propagate your lie? Cause the working poor you've been f***ing on are doing double shifts tonight.